thinking big thoughts, so you don't have to.
I plead.
Here's John Williams.
Whoa, wow. Hey, it's John. We're in the Allstate Skyline Studio. We're here weekdays from 1 to 3 and Saturdays from 10 to noon on social media. WGN King John is how you follow us on Instagram, on Twitter, on Facebook. And don't forget the Mincing Rascals. The Mincing Rascals were judged to be by the Headliners Club the best podcast in Chicago. It's a roundtable of people from the Chicago Tribune and WGN Radio who I think are pretty smart, pretty good at what they do, and they sit around and talk about the news. The last edition we dropped last Thursday was only about state and local news and some politics. We often go to Trump land, and I suspect tomorrow when we record our edition, or rather Thursday when we do, we'll spend some time talking. Is tomorrow Thursday? Yeah, I missed a day this week. Tomorrow when we record the Mincing Rascals, we'll spend some time talking about the Cohen testimony and the president's trip overseas. How fortuitous or not for Donald Trump that he's in Vietnam right now while this is going on, because maybe it's easy to distance yourself from it when you are physically that far away and making news of your own. But all of the networks are very interested in what Cohen is saying today, and it's become great theater. It has become great theater. John said that before the news. It is that, if nothing else. And it is maybe as frustrating as you thought it would be, too. That is, sometimes when the Republicans get their time, they virtually do not ask a question. Literally, just moments ago, as one of the Republican congressmen was wrapping up his time, and he says, I just got 8 seconds or 5 seconds. They'll often count out how much time they have left. And then he said, was it difficult to keep track of all of the lies that you were telling? Boom, gavel hits. And then the next person starts to go on. And they've just been pounding this guy. Clearly, his testimony is for the Republicans part of his punishment for pleading guilty to crimes or being found guilty of crimes. So Cohen's a bad guy. Cohen's a liar. And now part of his punishment is to sit there and they just blister the guy. The Democrats will come on and they'll say things quite literally like this. I know this is hard for your children. Good luck on your redemption. Literally what one of the Democrats said to him. We wish you well. Now let's talk about, and then they go on. But whenever the Republicans fill their slot, all they do is just try and remind everybody that Cohen's a liar. We can't trust him. He's got an agenda. He may have a new book coming out. He said, yes, he might write a book about his exploits. And so then the congressman said, well, maybe what you're doing here is trying to fill your new book. And so it's just been going back and forth. As they say, I don't have a dog in this hunt. I am sorry to see the spectacle that it is, but I also think it's a necessary spectacle. And is Cohen telling the truth? I don't know. At one point, one of the congresspeople asked him if he was ever asked by the president to threaten somebody, and he said yes. And the congresswoman said, how many times? And he said, oh, I don't know, many times. And they said, 50 times? He said, more than that. 100 times? More than that. 200 times? More than that. 500 times? He said, maybe about that over 10 years. They said, what do you mean by threaten? He said, well, call them up and threaten them with a lawsuit or with some sort of litigation. He didn't say that it was never that someone was going to break your kneecaps, but it didn't sound like that. It sounded more like the president was always using Cohen to send signals. And do you believe a word that the guy has to say? Back and forth, back and forth, back and forth. That's the circus that's going on today. Raja Krishnamurthy is on the panel. The congressman that frequently visits with us cannot join us today. He's busy, but perhaps he'll be able to join us tomorrow or the next day. It's, like I said, I don't know how productive this is, but it's great theater, if nothing else. And as John said, if you ever wanted to be a fly on the wall and wonder what used to happen, here's Cohen telling you his version of events. Mayoral election last night. Who saw Lori Lightfoot coming? I think some people I know did. Eric Zorn, one of our Mincing Rascals podcasters and a frequent commentator here from the Chicago Tribune, said Lori Lightfoot is a serious candidate. And we all knew she was a serious candidate, but I was talking to Walter Jacobson before, the legendary newsman who provides great commentary for us and will after 2 o'clock today. I was talking to Walter yesterday as the votes were still coming in. And he said, what do you think? And we were looking at the front page of the Tribune and the Sun-Times. Yesterday, Sun-Times had the 14 mayoral candidates on the front page. and they were well-lit, and they looked like campaign shots. Do you remember yesterday's front page of the Chicago Tribune? It had the same 14 candidates in two long columns, I recall. Maybe it was three or four, you know, but they had all their pictures there. But they darkened the background and the faces, and they made them look like mugshots. Literally, yesterday's Tribune's front page made it look like a gang. It's like, do you want any of these people? They're all dark and sinister and serious. They may end up testifying someday. That was the Tribune's view. The Sun-Times patina was just a little more neutral. I'm talking to Walter about that. He says, what do you think? And I said, well, I think this one's going to win. Boom. And I put my finger on Bill Daley. I amaze myself at how able I am to be wrong. Is that a thing, Jen? Is that a talent? I mean, literally, you could take me to the track and go pick a horse. And I would say, I really feel good about this horse. That horse would fall down and die before it got to the finish line.
Oh, no. There's people who, their complete lives, they've done everything wrong just because they have bad luck or no luck. Yep, I believe that picking.
This is me. But I think it's a special talent, because if you had 14 and you say, boy, I sure don't know, let's ask Williams. Williams would tell you who he thought was going to win.
Then you bet the opposite.
And then you'd be down to 13.
I know.
Because you know that one will not win.
You just bet the opposite of whatever John says and we'll be
cooler.
Fine, Jen.
I believe in Vegas they call it a cooler.
But see, I feel like I'm the same way. So if I bet the opposite in one of those other 13, that means that both my pick and John's pick are out.
What if you then picked my pick? Would that kind of circle back around to being right or wrong? I don't know.
I have no idea. Yeah. Like, I can't watch the Bears because if I don't watch the Bears, then they win. If I do watch the Bears, they lose. So... I feel ya.
I was with a couple of listeners last night, my sister-in-law and a friend of hers, Julie, who, lo and behold, is a listener. I didn't know that Julie was such a good listener. Mm-hmm. And we were talking about a number of things. Julie happened to have some Bears gear on. Did you meet Julie yesterday when she came through the newsroom?
I did.
She had a Bears pullover on, and she was visiting with us. Then we went to say hi to Kevin. And Kevin Powell, who does sports here, looked up and says, oh, like your top. Kind of painful, though. Double doink. And then he goes into that whole thing Kevin does.
Oh, gosh.
And I'm like, oh, Lord. Let's not pick at the scab. This man is healing. Oh, pretty tough. You know, double doink. Yes. But, you know, good team. But, you know, boy, oh, Cody Parkey.
That's a really good impression of him.
Oh, boy.
Every time he sees me, he says something in Turkish. It's the same thing. It's a name.
But
actually,
he knows a thing in Turkish.
Yeah. He says a name every time. And it's really funny.
He's fluent in Turkish?
No, he's fluent in one word in Turkish.
Oh,
a name.
It's the same thing over and over again.
A basketball player's name.
Okay.
Do you know that player?
Enes Kanter, but he goes, Enes Kanter. And it's really funny.
Well, that's how we say it in the NBA. The NBA does say Enes Kanter. How do you say it in Turkish?
Okay.
I know
okay.
That's your native tongue or one of your languages. So how do you say Enes Kanter?
Enes Kanter. And Kanter means blood, sweat.
Nice. Well, that's a good name for an NBA player. So I'm sitting down to dinner last night with Becky and Julie and my wife Brenda and I. And we're having a swell time over at Banderas. And we started to talk a little bit about her wearing her Bears jersey or sweat top and how she bumped into Kevin. And she said, well, here's what happened on the night of the Super Bowl. Because I said it was the Super Bowl when the Bears got out of the playoffs because of the double doink. And she said that he made that first field goal, but they had called timeout. But he kicked it anyway. Remember this story, right? The Chiefs? And so then he has to kick it again after the timeout. Well, during the timeout, she got up to go to the bathroom. She was going to come out of the bathroom. And her son said, no, you can't come out because you'll jinx it if you do. I actually think she was in the bathroom when the first field goal was attempted and went through. But then they said, no, there is a timeout. That doesn't count. So her son said, you can't come out to watch the second one, the real one now, because you were in when he made it. But remember, there was a timeout, so you have to stay in. She said, no, I think I need to be in my safe spot, which is on the couch with the blanket on my head. And so she sprinted to the couch and put the blanket on her head, and he missed. And her son is mad at her because that's why the Bears didn't go to the Super Bowl this year.
Yep.
People have these sorts of suspicions and theories and so on and so forth.
Yeah, that's why I just don't watch the Bears.
All of this is sort of a tangent to what Michael Cohen has been saying on Capitol Hill at the hearing right now. And in fact, he's continuing to testify. You'll be able to tell. Now, I don't know the congresswoman who's asking him questions right now, if she's a Democrat or a Republican. Let's listen in and see how quickly we can tell.
Talk to you about this intimidation of witness. Mr. Cohen, you were initially scheduled to testify before the House Oversight Committee on February the 7th, but your legal team delayed your testimony, quoting, ongoing
she's a Democrat
against your family from the president and Attorney Giuliani. Is that correct?
Yes, ma'am.
Congresswoman
and
Lawrence.
On November 29th, after you admitted that the president's negotiations over a real estate project in Russia continue well through the summer before the 2016 election, President Trump called you, quote, a weak person and accused you of lying. And then on December 16th, after 2018, after you disclosed that it was the president who directed you to arrange hush money payments to Stormy Daniels and Karen McDougal to conceal his extramarital affairs, he called you, the president of the United States, a rat. Mr. Cohen, why do you feel or believe that the president is repeatedly attacking you? You are stating that you feel intimidated, asking us to protect you, following your cooperation with law enforcement.
When you have access to 60 plus million people that follow you on social media, and you have the ability within which to spark some action by individuals that follow him, and from his own words that he can walk down Fifth Avenue, shoot someone, and get away with it. It's never comfortable when the President of the United States...
What do you think he can do to you?
A lot. And it's not just him. It's those people that follow him and his rhetoric.
What is a lot?
I don't know. I don't walk with my wife if we go to a restaurant or we go somewhere. I don't walk with my children. I make them go before me because I have fear, and it's the same fear that I had before when he initially decided to drop that tweet in my cell phone. I receive some, and I'm sure you'll understand, I receive some tweets. I receive some Facebook Messenger, all sorts of social media attacks upon me, whether it's the private direct message that I've had to turn over to Secret Service because they are the most vile, disgusting statements that anyone can ever receive. And when it starts to affect your children, that's when it really affects you.
Michael Cohen's testimony, we'll be listening in and out of that. We'll talk about the mayor's race, what happened and what it meant, and why some of the names you recognize didn't win and why some did that did. We'll talk about that in the 2 o'clock hour. Walter Jacobson will join us. We'll have another political analyst, and I'm really interested in what you think about the mayor's race and what happened yesterday and last night as well. In fact, I've got a question for you about that in a minute. This is WGN. Piece in the Chicago Tribune. Did you see it? 71 places this guy went to. Chicago's best burger, from dive bars to fancy hotels. One reporter tries 71 in search of excellence. Did he go to 71 places or 25 places and just tried 71 burgers at the 25? Anyway,
no, he went to 71, and he only included the top 25 in that article.
Ah.
At the very bottom, or yeah, at the very end, is where he shows the remaining, what's 71 minus 25? That number.
46? Oh, yeah, here
sure.
They go. 25 degrees, big and little, big and littles, big guys, sausage, big Jones, bistronomic, boba burger, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Okay, Pacific Standard Time, they got a burger. He went there. They didn't make the top 25. Of course, you don't go to Pacific Standard Time for a hot dog or a hamburger. The number one place, he said, the number one place in Chicago, dun, da, 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 is Donkey and Sticks Burger at Table. Or, no, it's Burger at Table Donkey and Stick. So I guess the name of the restaurant is Table Donkey and Stick. Is that it?
Yeah.
All right. And number two, the second best burger in the city is the Loyalist Cheeseburger at the Loyalist. Now, are those burgers here yet?
I have one from the number one.
Nice.
Table Donkey and Stick. And yes, the Loyalist Burger should be arriving any minute.
It's en route. And then the reporter who wrote this is going to join us, and we'll talk about his selection. And we're going to live stream on Facebook. I know it's not smell-o-vision, but we're doing the best we can here. We'll let you see it, and we'll sample it. I see Kevin is here. I'm glad that he got in a little early today. Maybe Kevin can join us in the studio. And, Jen, if you want to sample this after you do traffic in the 1:30 news, run down the hall, and you can be one of the other samplers. We'll judge the judges' decision on the best and second best burger in the city. You cool with that?
I'm cool with that.
And where's my invite?
Oh, yes, and in the newsroom.
Just checking.
Well, the problem, David, is if I invite... The newsroom's packed with people. Now, they're bringing two burgers from each place. I figure that's probably eight quarters.
Okay.
So, no, well, one for me.
That's right. It's
Elif,
okay.
Are you going to eat some of this stuff?
I actually just had lunch.
Elif's going to pass. Kevin will probably have one. Jen will have a piece. So that'll leave... five pieces for David Jennings and the folks in the newsroom. David, you're in.
All right.
Sears, Roebuck, and the Black community. Find out about the Chicago company's complex connection to Black history. That is tonight's cover story on WGN TV News at 9.
Colorado Port. This is this week. This is what we're ignoring. This is not what we're doing for the American people while we engage in this charade.
This would be a Republican.
This is not what the American people sent us here to do.
Congressman Roy from somewhere.
This is an embarrassment for our country.
This is what every single Republican has done this. They say Cohen's a liar, and the fact that we're here is lowering the integrity of the Congress.
She said, as I roughly expected, don't worry, I won't. I have more important things to do. And she, like the rest of the American people, have a hell of a lot more important things to do than to watch this.
They can't believe that they're being asked to do this.
I said, amen, darling. I can't help but think that is what the majority of the American people are thinking while watching this unbelievable circus.
Yeah, that's what's going on right now. You can visit By the Yard's grand opening event in Yorktown Center. The Michael Cohen hearing is what we just heard a little of there. Visit By the Yard's grand opening event in Yorktown Center March 8th through the 10th to see why By the Yard has been reviewed as the premier maintenance-free outdoor furniture. They're celebrating their new location by offering their best promotion ever. Save on furniture, get free delivery, and By the Yard will assemble it at no charge when you're in their local delivery area. I'll bet you are. Shop their Yorktown or Vernon Hills locations 3 days only, March 8th, March 9th, March 10th. Request a catalog at bytheyard.net today. Into the newsroom. We'll live stream some burgers. We'll continue to listen to the Cohen testimony all coming up. John Williams, WGN Radio. I see that the Cohen testimony has just taken a recess. The congressmen and women from Illinois are heading out. I thought I just saw Raja Krishnamurthy walk by, but that's not him on TV right now. I'm looking at a monitor, one with CNN, one with MSNBC. But the Cohen testimony was, as we've said many times, great theater. I don't know how productive it was. I don't know how productive it will be. The Democrats tried to get some semblance of information out of Cohen and get him to say things that were unbelievable and embarrassing to the president, and the Republicans simply punished him by telling him he's a big fat liar and this is a waste of everybody's time. Those hearings will resume, and we'll continue to listen in and out of them. We'll talk about the mayoral race and the really historic and interesting election that took place yesterday, a runoff yet to come, April 2nd. We'll visit with some smart people who know more about this than I do a little after. You know what? That one's not going to work, Jen. You're going to have to use the one over there. We'll talk more about that after, too. In the Tribune today, there is an article that begins, right around my 50th burger, I began to dream in ground beef. Now, that's a good sentence. I don't. And the man that wrote it is in our studio right now. His name is Rick. I'm going to get your name right. Kindlesberger, food and dining critic at the Chicago.
Nick Kindlesberger.
Nick,
yes.
Kindlesberger, food and dining critic at the Chicago Tribune. Nick, welcome to the show.
Thanks so much for having me.
Well done. So your mission was?
My mission was to try as many burgers as I possibly could have. And so
to find the best burger in the city of Chicago?
I was including the suburbs as well. Yeah.
71. So, why 71?
I thought that was a sufficiently insane number that people wouldn't be able to dispute me out of hand.
Right. It's not like you just went to some of the obvious ones. You went to 71 different places.
Right. Because a lot of these lists are based on, you know, they look at what other lists people have gone to, and they go to those, and then they judge. And I really wanted to open it up and try to visit as many places as I possibly could.
Yeah. So, first place burger in the city of Chicago, is...
Table Donkey and Stick. It's in Logan Square, and it's a very unusual burger.
That has just been delivered to us.
Number two is the Loyalist.
We will also sample that in just minutes, the Loyalist cheeseburger at the Loyalist. I'm going to have you describe them as we eat them. I've also been joined in the studio by hundreds of people. Jen DeSalvo has just strolled in. Hi, Jen.
Hi.
You went from traffic back into this studio from sports. Kevin Powell is here. Hi, Kevin.
I'm hungry. Can I eat yet?
I didn't even realize I was sitting next to Kevin. I thought you were another guest.
I just bumped into Kevin. I just bumped into Kevin. I said, hey, Kev, did you see that article in the Tribune today? The guy's in the studio. We got the first and second place burger in the studio. And he just looked up at me and said,
if Ostroval's not number one on the list, it's completely void to me.
I've never had Ostroval.
With all due respect. Now, you tried 71 burgers, so I trust your opinion. But if you've had Ostroval, it is a perfect cheeseburger in every single way.
Your thoughts?
It's a very good cheeseburger. I'm not discounting that at all. But it's not the best. Okay, number 15, I believe, I put it on.
Yeah, and I thought it was very interesting what you wrote, because this people won't be surprised to hear, but may not want to hear. You wrote, sit at the bar, and you'll get this is at Ostroval. And you will get an unobstructed view of how this insanely popular burger gets made. On my last visit, I watched the chef shower the patties in so much salt, you'd think a blizzard broke out in the West Loop Diner. Next came a layer of black pepper that almost completely covered the salt. Once pickled off the griddle, the two patties, you know that a single means a double here, right?
Yes.
Get stacked on a well-toasted bun slathered heavily in creamy Dijonnaise. In other words, Ostroval serves a salt, pepper, grease bomb, and while I would not mind some more acid to cut through, it's hard to deny the appeal.
See, I already know that I'm going to like Cheval better than this burger, because this burger is not my style. It's a pretzel bun, first of all. There's too much green on the burger already.
Wow.
Ostroval is perfect. It's just thin patties off the grill with, which I believe it's a garlic aioli they normally use. And then you can get the thick-cut bacon. And it's just basic American cheese. Right. So it's very...
Kevin?
It's a very basic cheeseburger, but it's perfectly done.
This sounds like a very high-class problem, Kevin.
Sounds like somebody Kevin works for. Kevin, you do have any skin in this game? Are you neutral?
No,
this
is
your
go-to
place. I want you to open up to the possibility of the burger. You've never even experienced something like this.
All right.
First of all right. This is not just a pretzel bun. This is a pretzel bun that they make in their shop every day.
Where is this?
Table Donkey and Stick.
Let's sample that. Go ahead and hand it around.
Start passing it around.
Is there actually donkey in this burger?
What is the meat in the Table Donkey and Stick burger?
I mean, these are all beef burgers. I didn't include any turkey burgers or anything like that. So
turkey burgers are not included. These are all beef burgers. But some of them do a blend, right?
Like some of them do a
bacon
blend,
or pork shoulder or something like that.
I don't know the specific blend for this one. I know the Loyalist does include some bacon fat in theirs, along with short rib. But yes.
Okay.
Ryan, did you have some of this?
And this one also has a layer of really funky Alpine cheese.
This is the best burger in the city of Chicago.
This is the burger that I couldn't stop thinking about.
Are you getting a good view of this?
Touched my finger to the burger and then licked it. And it tastes like every single microphone in here is not going to want to be touched by anybody for hours, days. All the garlic. Can you smell that?
Yeah, I can. How about you, Ryan Burrow, newsman? What do you think?
I like it.
Okay. Here we go. Ready, set.
It's very good. It's
delicious. Yeah, it is.
Big fan.
That's all you have? You don't have any other
pushback?
The
cheese is what... I'm trying to figure out what that flavor is.
I'll be honest with you. This has traveled a great distance, and you've judged us to be the best in Chicago. It's a good burger, but it's not blowing my socks off. It doesn't to me taste like one of those blended burgers. It's not as fatty as I thought it would be.
Mm-hmm. Obviously, a burger is best enjoyed within
traveled.
Yes.
What's the location for this place?
This is on Armitage near California Avenue in Logan Square.
Yeah. Now, here's what you wrote. What can only be described as a burger awakening.
That's right.
A Table Donkey and Stick. Like any meat-eating American, over the years I've developed entrenched burger preferences, which could lead me to dismiss a burger before I even took a bite. And then I stumbled on this miniature Logan Square restaurant. It's not a big place, huh?
No, very small.
And I realized that the burger universe was vast and full of wonder beyond my understanding.
I love that.
Okay, so this is the best burger in the city. Now let's try number two, which has just been brought in. Is that right, guys? Where's
that?
So.
There it is.
Saw that bad boy in half. This is from the Loyalist, and the burger that they serve there is called the Loyalist Cheeseburger. You wrote, no restaurant in town understands how crucial onions are to burgers as thoroughly as loyalist. The restaurant's cheeseburger, known colloquially as the Dirty Burg, embraces the power of three kinds, raw onion, charred, and pickled, to add bite, sweetness, and acid to each bite. Instead of some pretentious bun, this one gets a soft hamburger roll coated in more sesame seeds than McDonald's probably has in its U.S. reserves. You bet it features meat ground in-house, combining short rib chuck with ground bacon for a ludicrously fatty patty. No crunch here, thanks to the extra juicy meat. Was that you
Look
over there,
Jen? Look at these onions.
Jen DeSalvo is now sampling the Loyalist
First
cheeseburger.
First garlic, then onions.
All right, this is much more up my alley, which is, it's not too dressed up. It's just the basics done right. A lot of cheese, the onions.
I see the McDonald's reference there with the bun, too. Yeah,
which I kind of like that. I mean, you know, I'll tell you what. There have been times where I've gone to places, and the bun to me is critical. But if the buns, if I'm getting too much bun, then I'm like, you know, I didn't come for a bun burger. I came for a meat burger. I came for a beef burger. Has this been being handed to me here?
Yeah, okay. That's all for you.
This is the Loyalist. David Jennings, did you get one of these as well? Yeah? Okay.
Just notice the amount of sesame seeds on top.
Look at how beautiful that is.
But yes, this is the...
Hi, Facebook. We're live streaming on Facebook right now.
Before I started, if I had predicted what burger would be number one, this was definitely it. This is exactly the kind of burger I love. Lots of onions.
It's gooey. Between the onions, the pickle, the charred, and the raw, and this sauce, what am I eating here?
So they actually have an onion. There's onion in the mayo that they they put in there, just to make sure that there's enough. You know, they don't want any part of the burger not to have onion infused into it.
Wow.
And it's incredible, an incredible burger, obviously.
Okay, where's this location?
This is in the West Loop.
There was Loyalist. A big kick of salt at the end.
Yeah. It's very salty.
I like the first burger. I like the other one. This is okay.
I like that guy, yeah.
The first one is much better.
David Jennings says burger at table donkey stick.
I think I agree with him only because this Loyalist burger, we each had a quarter of it, and that was enough for me.
It's a lot.
Yeah.
It's a whole lot.
It's very salty. I can feel the salt in this.
Right.
But welcome to eating out. Anything you eat out is going to have a lot of salt.
Yeah. Welcome to my ever-rising blood pressure.
I'm telling you, I feel the salt in the Loyalist a little too much. I didn't feel it in the burger at table donkey stick.
So where are the other 69?
Yeah.
Bad Apple's in my in the teens for me. I love the meat that they use at Bad Apple. They get their all their meat sourced from Pat LaFrieda in New York, which is, if you're in New York, almost every burger that's a big deal there, they get their meat from Pat LaFrieda. And so it's very cool that they're getting their stuff. So that's
number one is burger at Table Donkey Stick. Number two is the Loyalist cheeseburger at the Loyalist. Number three, Slagle Farms beef burger at Owen and Engine.
That's right. That's English kind of pub in Logan Square.
Number four, Double Fatso with cheese at Fatso's Last Stand.
Yeah. Southside?
No, this is in the West Town.
Oh,
so it's on Chicago, and it's just a regular kind of hot dog stand. But I don't know why this burger is so good. But I've had it, you know, dozens of times, and it wows me every single time.
You know, when we talk about food in Chicago, people will fight over where the best pizza is. Right. There's great loyalties. I think hot dog stands too.
Mm-hmm.
Are there and the pizza conversation? You know, has Malnati's. We all know that, and then Gino's and some heavyweights, and then some local ones too that people fight for, but I don't know what the fighting words are for best burger in Chicago.
I think it's all food in Chicago though, because the food is so good. So if you go to a restaurant, like no, there's no way anything could be better than this.
But
and then someone says, no, this is way better.
What's the Malnati's of burgers of Chicago? The big dog that everybody knows.
I think nationwide though, Nick, wouldn't you agree that Cheval's probably one of the most well-known burgers in Chicago?
There we go again the Cheval.
I'm not kidding. Look at it.
Where does Kuma's fit in?
But it kind of changes every year. Every like 3 or 4 years, it changes. So it was Cheval. I would say that actually the Loyalist has been picking up steam recently, then Cheval before that, and then before that, all you heard about was Kuma's. Mm-hmm. And
Mastodon.
Which,
what's that?
Oh, one of their burgers. And then
really?
The Metallica.
You guys know this stuff,
yeah,
huh?
One of them's got barbecue sauce, the other one's got buffalo sauce.
And this burger is 10 ounces. The meat is 10 ounces. Everything else added up is over a pound.
We're talking about where?
At Kuma's Corner.
And that's the place where you get the option, do you want a bun? And it's like, of course I want a bun. And then you get it, and it's like, oh, my gosh, this thing is so rich. Maybe I didn't need a bun.
I don't know if you do want a bun, because I've had the Slayer there, and it is amazing.
Is that the one with the poblano peppers?
I don't know what's all on it. It's a giant just mess of heaven on a plate.
Did this one make your list?
Yes. Kuma's did make my list in the 20s, I would say. It's a very good burger. It's a little big. It's sort of impossible to fit it comfortably in your mouth, but you can attack it. I did calculate roughly calculate the number of calories, and I think we're getting into the 2,000 range.
Spoiler alert, everyone.
For the Jules Burger, which, you know, take that with me. Maybe split it with a friend.
Nick Kindlesberger's in our studio, food critic for the Chicago Tribune. In today's Trib, he confesses to in a month having tried 71 different burgers in the city. We asked the restaurants to bring in their first and second choices, your first and second choices. So we've been enjoying Table Donkey and Stick and the Loyalist. And also in the studio are Ryan Burrow from WGN Radio News, Kevin Powell from Eating Food.
I'm sweating now with all this sodium we just ingested, and that's only half a burger.
You guys are amateurs.
I just want to know, how is it you could have tried 70 burgers over how many weeks?
About 3 to 4 weeks.
So 2 a day, huh?
And you're still thin.
Yeah, you still look good.
I had an incredible workout regimen that I did every single day.
Wow.
Turned vegetarian at home.
Right. You might as well.
I never ate the fries. Fries would kill, So everywhere you go, they put these fries, and some of them are really good, like at the Loyalist and all these places. So I had to totally change my whole sort of life balance.
Ella says we got to take a break. When we come back, tell me one that surprised you. You went, wow, you and I talked off the air. Pacific Standard Time has a burger. People don't go there for a burger. Tell me a place that surprised you, maybe disappointed you, and I'll let you guys chime in with your personal favorite if you've got a minute. We're looking at the article in the Tribune today, Best Burgers in the City, on WGN. We're talking for just another minute now with the guy who wrote that article in the Chicago Tribune today. Nick Kindlesberger, the food and dining critic, tasted 71 different burgers over the course of about a month. And we asked him to come into our studio. And Elif also got the first and second place burgers in the city. So shout out to those fine folks for not only winning, but also being so kind as to send us the burgers. That's the folks at Table, Donkey, and Stick, number one in the city. And the Loyalist cheeseburger at the Loyalist, according to you, sir. Any surprises when you looked at this list or when you made this list?
Absolutely. Cafe Mary Jean in Humboldt Park doesn't have a burger on the menu for most of the week. But on Thursdays, they have this wild burger. If you look at the picture online, you can see it's covered in everything spice like you would get on a bagel. The sort of everything spice. Instead of a ketchup, it has this smoked tomato jam that's like a barbecue sauce. And the chef admitted to me that he cooks the burger in a lot of butter. He made me, he emphasized that a lot. And it just doesn't taste like any other burger in town, and it's really wonderful.
What about you, Ryan? What's your go-to burger in the city?
In the city, I don't really have one. I'm a suburbanite, but I got two in the suburbs to tell you about. One, Brant's in Palatine. Very, very good burgers there. And then if you're in Northwest Indiana, Radius in Valparaiso has a peanut butter burger, an Elvis peanut butter burger, which blew my mind. I've never had it before, and I will do it again.
Jim, was it you that brought up Portillo's? Because you didn't sample Portillo's. Maybe because it's too common or obvious. Burger King isn't on here either, but what's your go-to joint?
We already touched base on those. I'm a creature of habit. I do Kuma's and I do the Bad Apple. And we used to do Rocket Burger Bar, but Rocket Burger Bar is no longer.
Oh, no kidding.
Yeah.
Kevin, your thoughts?
Au Cheval, have I mentioned that location yet?
No, it hasn't come up.
I would say outside of that one, Mott Street. They came into the studio a couple weeks back, and it was outstanding. It made it on Nick's list, I think, right before, right after Cheval. And
Au Cheval, I would say.
It's very much similar to Cheval, but they put some onion straws on top of it, so it's just a little bit different. Those are probably my two go-tos.
Mm-hmm. I still never had one of their burgers.
From Mott Street or
from Al Cheval?
Oh, right now. We don't need to work anymore.
Mott Street's good because now they have mini Mott, so you can go and just get the burger there.
And they have small Cheval as well. And yeah, small Cheval. A couple other locations.
I'm getting the wrap up. What's the restaurant you're hearing from readers that should have gotten a better rating or wasn't included at all and should have been?
This place called Au Cheval is, I've heard a lot.
Are you serious? Is that the only one to be busting your
not
chops
the only
about
one. And Brant's, actually, I've heard a lot about that in Palatine.
Yeah. Keep up the good work. On Sundays.
So. And the next time you do one of these, let's do this again. That sure worked for me.
Do steak next time so we can bring steak into the studio.
Thinking big thoughts so you don't have to.
I'm thinking.
Here's John Williams.
Sodium. After having had those burgers, which were all very good. Thank you very much, Table Donkey Steak. Thank you to the folks at the Loyalist. Congratulations to each of those two restaurants. Tribune piece today says best burgers in the city are from there. And they made sure we got some of it to sample in our studio. The whole article is in the Tribune today in print and online. You can read all of the reviews and summaries online, and they posted, I think, 25 of them in print. So thanks again to our guest for coming by as well, Nick Kindlesberger. And then much of the staff from WGN Radio seem to be very interested in participating in that segment. We move on to a little bit of politics now. Nationally, the Cohen testimonies have been underway. Testimony has been underway. Michael Cohen, the former Trump executive, attorney, and fixer, has been... This is what it's been like on the national scene in the Congress today.
But here we are today. Our first big hearing with, as you and we all know, a convicted liar, lying to Congress, a criminal. And I believe this witness is totally incompatible with the stated goal of having to seek the truth in this hearing. This is the first time in the history of Congress we have someone testifying here who has already been convicted of lying to Congress. So congratulations for being the first in Congress to do that, and Mr. Cummings as well. I can't believe we're coming. We have brought this committee to its knees in terms of losing its credibility, and it's a shameful mockery of what our purpose is. I yield back.
Chairman Simon has expired. Mr. Lynch.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Let me just pick up on those last comments. I want to talk about a low point. How about Mr. Papadopoulos pled guilty, Mr. Manafort convicted, pled guilty to two other charges, Mr. Gates pled guilty, Mr. Flynn pled guilty, Mr. Pinedo pled guilty, Mr. Van der Zwan pled guilty, Mr. Kilimnik indicted for obstruction of justice. And for 2 years, you want to talk about an agenda, my friends on the other side of the aisle refused to bring any of these people up before the committee.
So, before the House committee... Where Mr. Cohen is testifying, you heard everybody but Mr. Cohen. They're just going like that all day long. Mayoral race yesterday, so you've got the... he did speak, but you sure didn't hear him in that clip. And you sure don't when the Republicans talk because they just berate him. And then the Democrats are trying to manage the fact that this guy's already been convicted of lying to them and trying to get some dirt on the president. And that's been the day. Now, we voted for mayor in Chicago yesterday. And maybe you saw Lori Lightfoot coming. Maybe you know Tony Preckwinkle was going to finish in second place and they'll be in the runoff. I did not know that. Walter Jacobson is in our studio, the legendary newsman. Walter, did you see this one coming?
No, I did not. I was surprised then. I am still surprised, but I think it's a very exciting development for Chicago. And before we get into any of the specifics, we ought to make it clear, John, that it's not over yet. And I don't mean because of the runoff. I mean because the votes can change. There are 30-some thousand at last count, which was yesterday afternoon, there's some 30-some thousand absentee or mail-in ballots that haven't come back to the Chicago Board of Elections yet, and they haven't been counted. If Bill Daley wins 10 of those 30,000, then he's going to be in second place. If he wins 20 of those 30,000...
20,000 of the 30,000.
Yeah, right. If he wins 20 of the 30,000, he will be in first place. Now, it's not likely to happen. I'm sure if he gets a few of the mail-ins, the others will get them too. But it's not over. But for the sake of discussion, it's close to over, and we're in for one really great hell of a show for the next 3 months.
So you're happy. I mean, you think this will be good for Chicago?
Oh, I do. I think it's very good.
Because they're two good candidates?
That's right. They both have a lot of positives. Secretary Toni Preckwinkle has more negatives. She is a political being from the Chicago Democratic Central Committee. And the issues, the main issue in this election over the next couple of months is going to be ethics, because that's what drove the vote yesterday, and that's what's talked about more than any other issue.
Maybe by those of us who vote or those of you who watch these things, but they all have similar policy planks. They're talking about crime. They're talking about policing.
Right.
They're talking about taxes and neighborhood development. Both of the remaining candidates do seem to have those as central to their campaigns. But I guess, in the background, and this may be what sunk Amara, this may be what sunk Bill Daley a little bit, were ethical questions at the end.
No, there is no doubt, no question whatever, that the candidates and the media, I say hats off to both for having done a very good job for the past year and a half or more on this campaign, these campaigns. And we have all, as you say, all of the candidates who ran, in large part, agreed with the major issues. You know, legalize marijuana and pay for health care, et cetera.
Yeah.
And the crisis in Chicago with the budgets, and as in Illinois. That was discussed. But when voters go to the polls, particularly in this town, I would say the issues take secondary position to those things that are more personally and personality run.
Okay, I want to talk to you about that. And I want to bring Heather Sharon in here, who's the managing editor of The Daily Line. You hear her on WGN Radio. In fact, I reached out to Justin Kaufman, who did a great job anchoring our coverage last night. Said, who's really good on this? Justin, come on and talk to us. And Justin said, no, get Heather. Heather, welcome to the show. How are you?
Thanks for having me. I have Justin Kaufman on my payroll, so I'm glad to hear he's earning his keep.
Tell me what you've heard Walter and I chat a little bit about this. Jump in there. What do you want to say?
I mean, nobody picked Lori Lightfoot to finish in first place with a bullet. She led from the moment they started counting votes to the moment that they stopped counting votes late last night. And so that was what surprised me. It was a very low turnout election. We're going to slightly beat the record for an all-time low set in 2007. But, you know, we're still hovering around 34% of registered voters. So that, I thought, would benefit Toni Preckwinkle as the executive director of the Cook County Democratic Party.
You know,
her bread and butter is getting people to the polls. And I thought that that would benefit Bill Daley, who, of course, has, you know, a lifetime of experience of watching his father and then his brother get voters to the polls. But it didn't quite work out that way. And I think that Walter is correct in that the motivating force was sort of a desire not only for change, but a desire in the type of leadership Chicago has either endured or enjoyed, pick your pleasure, over the past several decades.
It had to be. It had to be the motivating force because Lori Lightfoot made that the key core of her campaign. Her television ads were about very little else than the ethics issue. Well, boy, when she walked into that law school or law firm library, she's rather petite. She looks almost vulnerable, but her resume is just so incredibly good.
I think that's so interesting, Walter. She is petite, and her body language is not aggressive or strong. She's no Bill Daley walking into a room.
No, not walking in.
Her resume is awesome, and she is a dynamite interview. I had the very same reaction when she sat in the seat you were sitting in and talked to us for the first time. And I thought, who is this lady, and what has she got? And when she starts talking, she's got game. She really, I think, has a passionate and informed opinion about the issues in the city.
And it's going to be up to Toni Preckwinkle for somehow cut her down a step or two.
Well, we have two black. We're going to have the second black and the second female and the first black female. Distinguish the two candidates, Heather. How would you say these women are different from each other?
Well, what's interesting is that they are both, you know, if you want to go from broad strokes, they're both promising to chart a much more progressive course than the city has taken under Richard M. Daley or under Rahm Emanuel. So with that, you know, they're aligned in that way. However, Toni Preckwinkle's argument to voters is going to be, look, I ran Cook County. I'm running it right now. this is a tough job. You need somebody who's got experience in sort of marshaling this bureaucracy and pulling the levers of power. You don't want somebody who's going to have to learn on the job. Now, Lori Lightfoot's going to say, look, I've got plenty of experience at City Hall. She helped run the Office of Emergency Management Communication under Mayor Daley, and she was also appointed by Mayor Emanuel to run not only the police board, but to to lead the task force that he formed in the wake of the Laquan McDonald murder. So she, you know, is somebody who's certainly familiar with the hallways at City Hall, and she will say, I will benefit from coming from the outside without having made decades of relationships and agreements and friendships and am beholden to no one. So I think that's sort of where you're going to see this argument sort of split.
What do you think?
I mean, that's an entirely different race than the one I think most people were expecting when you were going to have somebody like Tony Preckwinkel or Lori Lightfoot running against somebody like Bill Daley or Gary Chico or somebody, you know, sort of coming from the more moderate conservative wing of the Chicago Democratic
Party. Happened to Bill Daley? Walter and I were talking before the show yesterday, and I said it's going to be Preckwinkel and Daley. It's almost boring. I mean, this has been fun. Amara Anya was interesting, and, you know, there were a lot of interesting candidates and qualified candidates. But at the end of the day, I thought it's predictable. It's going to be a Daley, and it's going to be the Cook County Board Chair and President.
I think Daley lost it because, as the other candidates, the issue was Ed Burke and what the people who are running the city are going to do in terms of ethics.
So and Burke, the stink from Burke, who won re-election, by the way.
Right.
And he didn't go 56%. To a runoff.
56%.
Yeah. So maybe that's not a runaway, but it's...
It's enough to make him okay. Avoid any kind of runoff.
But do you think the Burke smell stuck on Daley
I don't think there's... Well, it's not that the stuck on Daley so much as it helped Lori Lightfoot.
You agree with that, Heather?
Sure. Yeah, I'll make two other suggestions as well. One, I think that you saw Jerry Joyce, who is an attorney and is well-known on the Southwest side. I think you saw him spend a lot of money, air a lot of ads, and do better than most people expected. And there are many people in the Daley camp today who blame Jerry Joyce for taking votes away from Daley and sort of pushing Preckwinkel into that second spot. Huh. The other issue is I think that Daley really angered the members of the unions by suggesting that Illinois should change the Constitution to allow a reduction in pension benefits. And that is just a non-starter, not only for unions, but, you know, we've also seen Governor J.B. Pritzker come out against it. So I would not be surprised to hear that motivated some people who may have been leaning towards Daley, who had really sort of coalesced the pro-business community around him in the last several weeks of the race, to say, you know what, I can't do that because that threatens my family's financial future. I think that, coupled with Jerry Joyce's, sort of vigorous campaigning, I think that may have been the difference.
And there's this element, too, don't forget, that there was an ad campaign introduced on television in the last couple of weeks that was very firmly against Daley. I thought the ad was unfair. It accused Daley of things that he wasn't guilty of. For example, leading Bruce Rauner to be the way he was on conservative versus progressive issues, and saying that Daley was part of the machine. That was a very strong ad. And, you know, Daley came within one percentage point of being in the runoffs. That certainly had to have a lot to do.
I wonder if the two of you think, we'll pause here and I'll get your answers to this when we come back. Is the soda tax going to be an issue, or has that already been factored in? Answer that when we come back. And also, did Willie Wilson somehow upset the math on the election yesterday, because Willie was one of, what, the four candidates that got double digits? Are you all surprised by that? And finally, going forward, how do you think this campaign's going to go? Walter Jacobson, the legendary newsman who does commentaries on WGN Radio, is in the studio. Heather Cerrone's on the phone. We're talking about the mayoral election. We'll have a runoff April 2nd. Walter Jacobson, the legendary newsman, is in our studio. You hear his commentaries in the mornings here on WGN Radio. And Heather Cerrone is the editor at the Daily Line. By the way, Heather, for those who don't know your website, what do you all do over there at the Daily Line?
So we're at thedailyline.net, and we cover Chicago city politics, Cook County politics, and state politics. Just every detail you could possibly know, we are on it. We will tell you what it means and why you should care.
Did the soda tax matter? Did anybody care about that for Tony Preckwinkle or any of the other candidates?
I think it did. I mean, you know, one of the things that I think has been forgotten, sort of the crazy twists and turns of this election, is that when, Tony Preckwinkle was elected to a third term as Cook County Board President, sort of the chattering classes, and I'll include myself in that as well as you, John, said, oh, well, you know, yeah, she pulled it out against Bob Fioretti, but he wasn't really tough competition. And, you know, her career is pretty much over because everybody's so angry about the soda tax. And then, of course, you know, Rahm Emanuel decided to not run for a third term, and, you know, the landscape looked completely different immediately after that. But there are many people who really hated paying that tax, and just, you know, it's stuck in their craw. And, you know, I think it's something that we're going to see come up in the next, you know, final weeks of this sort of overtime mayoral campaign.
Really? Walter, would you advise Lori Lightfoot to bring up the soda tax to Tony Preckwinkle?
Sure, she could, because any little bit on having to do with money and taxes is helpful to the one who proposes it and hurts the one who doesn't. But, and you know, you mentioned Willie Wilson. We should just make this point. He got 10% of the votes in the last election. That's a pretty good number. So he's going to matter, and so will Mendoza, and so will Chico matter, because whom they endorse will be very important. That's helpful.
I hadn't thought about that. Yeah.
I think the main issue, the one that's not going to be overshadowed, is the question of ethics and youth and turning the insiders out and reflecting what happened in the national midterms a couple of months ago. And I don't see how any of the candidates can reflect that to the degree that Lori Lightfoot can. All she's got to do is get some very smart people who will advise her on politics. She doesn't know much about politics. Yeah. But you know, John, you know, every mayor who comes in doesn't know enough about what it's like to be mayor
until she's been
there for a while.
Ask the current resident of the White House. And our texters are saying, Lori Lightfoot, what a breath of fresh air. We aren't endorsing anybody here. I'm just telling you what I'm reading. Walter said what he said. Before we go, Heather, what's your last comment or observation about all of this?
I would just remind people that there is an ongoing federal corruption investigation looming just out of most reporters' eyesight at City Hall. And every morning for the last couple of months, I've woken up and grabbed my phone, eager to see, you know, who had been charged, if anybody had been indicted, and who was wearing a wire now. So, you know, it's a reality TV cliche, but expect the unexpected. This race looks nothing like it did a month ago. It looks nothing like it did 2 months ago, and I would expect the race to be in a completely different place by March 27th.
The Hillary Clinton-Donald Trump election notwithstanding, the FBI does have a habit of getting out of the way when elections loom. Now that the election is over, do you think they're going to wait until the runoff before we hear more about that, or do you think we're going to start to see more tapes and more stories like you're referring to, Heather, before April 2nd?
Well, we might. You know, whether or not the FBI takes official action, you know, by, you know, filing a charge or bringing an indictment is one question. I will pay credit to my colleagues at the Sun-Times, the Tribune, and in every other Chicago newsroom who are all scrambling, hoping to break that next piece of news to help inform voters. So the FBI may think that they're working on their timetable, and Chicago journalists may have something to say about that. Because remember, they made no formal statements about Alderman Danny Solis's participation in the Ed Burke investigation, and that was entirely brought to light by the Chicago Sun-Times.
And I believe that the Sun-Times got a lot of that inadvertently, so you're right. It wasn't like they wanted to get in front of this thing at all. Heather Sharon is a managing editor at The Daily Line, and you know Walter Jacobson. You hear him in the mornings with Justin and Steve here on WGN. What a pleasure, Heather. Justin Kaufman said, make sure you put Heather on. I'm really glad we did. Thanks for your time.
Thanks for having me. It's an honor to be on.
Walter, it's always a pleasure to see you in the halls and to hear you on the show. Jump in here again real soon. We'll do more of this, all right?
Absolutely, whenever you're ready.
I'm very stressed lately.
A lot of people are.
I was talking to my turtle and I said, well, at least now the mayoral election is over. And And all of those ads are over, too.
Uh-oh.
And then my turtle said, there's another election in a month. The runoff for mayor.
Politosis will do that.
Make turtles talk? I didn't know my turtle could talk.
Too much political talk will stress you out, and that's called politosis.
Check, I got that.
That's why 4 out of 5 dentists are recommending Eurelium Life 9000. Carefully crafted in New Jersey by an ethnically blended group of scientists wearing white lab coats, Eurelium Life 9000 will make you feel like a new you.
Like after a lobotomy?
No.
Or one of those colonic flushes?
No, that's not it.
My cousin swallowed some magnets, and he seems to be doing well.
Take Eurelium Life 9000 as a liquid, pill, gel cap, eye drop, nasal mist, ear burst, time-release arm patch, powder, ointment, or suppository. Plus, we're having some success with that home epidural kit.
If this will take my political anxiety away, president is still president, right? Then I'll take my chances.
Side effects include itching, burning, bleeding, chafing, and some mild cases of death have been reported.
I'll bet I won't get that.
The chafing?
Whatever. Anything to take this politosis away.
Ask your doctor if Eurelium Life 9000 is right for you. If he or she says no, ask someone else. You know, maybe we won't have the kind of anxiety locally that we've been all suffering from nationally, or maybe even locally since before yesterday's vote. We have two candidates now. Have we posted the new NewsClick, producer Elif? And the new NewsClick says, okay, so you've got Lori Lightfoot and Tony Preckwinkle. And are you pretty satisfied? Did the process distill to the top the two very best candidates? Or are you disappointed with the two candidates? I'm okay with this. I don't know that that's the best way to, you know, judge a field or to champion the field, but I'm okay with this. You know, if I voted for Jerry Joyce and I thought he was a swell guy and I liked his campaign commercials, or if you liked Mara Anya's chutzpah and youth and energy, or, you know, when you pick the talents that all of these people brought, at least you've got, I don't know. Maybe you don't love what you've got, but I think at least you've got two very intelligent. I don't know. I'm such a sucker for a resume. You say I graduated from the University of Chicago and have a graduate degree from the University of Chicago, and I'm like, okay, that's a big box for me checked. You've got two very intelligent, experienced people. I don't know if the politics of race or gender or orientation matter, but it'll be different voices than we've had at the helm of the city of Chicago for a very long time. So I'm looking at the 14, and on the NewsClick, I'll say, okay, I think those are two good choices. Now, you may say not, but I'm not disappointed with the way the process worked. I'm also surprised the way the process worked. Eric Zorn, the columnist for the Chicago Tribune, you hear him with Bill and Wendy. He's one of the Mincing Rascals. He'll record a podcast with us tomorrow. He's been saying for the last couple of weeks, Lori Lightfoot's coming on strong. I'm seeing signs. She's a progressive. And some of the people that are shooting themselves in the foot, she's going to make headway. She's going to be the one. Or two. That's all you need to be. So now the question is, which way will it go? Walter Jacobson reminded us that there are still uncounted ballots out there. And if Bill Daley just runs the table on those, he will unseat Tony Preckwinkle and be one of the final two. We'll see how that goes. So that's our NewsClick at WGNRadio.com. We're asking you for your views on that. What else do we got to do? There's a couple things we need to take care of, right, Producer Elif? Yeah. All right, I want to just clear up a couple of things. Like many of you, I spend a lot of time wondering about the lifeboats on the Titanic. When we were talking yesterday about the authenticity of some of the movies and storylines that were nominated for Best Picture for the Oscars, including The Green Line, and then people get upset and they say, well, that's not really the way the story went, and the family of the one guy said, no, that doesn't respect his legacy correctly, and is that story told true? And I think anytime you go to a movie anymore, you must know two things. One is that you may learn some things, you will gain some knowledge, but you also need to know that you're going to gain some knowledge that is not right. And the hard part is going to be to try and figure out which is the truth and which is not. So you're going to get versions of these stories, and they're going to, in some way, inform you and further your understanding. And in other ways, you're going to be a little bit screwed by the facts now because you got them wrong. And the movies, this is, I guess, the central takeaway, they don't care. You have to, if you care enough, don't go to a movie and come out of a movie thinking that you have gained an appreciable knowledge of the details of that story. You'll get the big picture, and you'll have a, okay, the civil rights was bad for black people era because they weren't able to stay in hotels, but exactly some of the details of the movie aren't true. And I think that's a hard lesson learned, which gets us to the Titanic. We found a story yesterday, and we say, okay, what were other instances where the movie told us one thing, but that's not the truth? And in this article from Cracked.com, our go-to source for knowledge about all things, they said that in the movie Titanic, you saw half-empty lifeboats and the crew that was even murdering people, you know, pushing them to their deaths to make sure that they were able to get on the ship, on the lifeboats, but not other people. Too many of the lifeboats left the Titanic. First of all, there weren't enough anyway. And too many of them just scrammed out of there without filling it up. But this article said, now that's the movie version, but this article online that we were referring to and walking through a bunch of falsehoods in movies said no. And the Titanic, actually, the crew behaved heroically, valiantly, and that the lifeboats were filled to the brim, over capacity. And they did everything they could, including sacrificing their own lives to make sure that the passengers were able to squeeze into those lifeboats. That myth about half-empty lifeboats is not true. So I says, okay. But then somebody called in. Then somebody texted in and said, no, that's not the case. So Elif and I spent more time than we should today calling around to Halifax, Canada, and places where there are smart people about the Titanic. And we said, what was the deal with the lifeboats in the Titanic?
Seriously?
Yeah, this was a lot of my day today. This was too much of my day today. Well, I care now.
Yeah.
Well, do you care? I mean, aren't you at least curious, Jen DeSalvo?
I'm definitely curious, and I'm very impressed of your journalistic work today.
We think big thoughts here, so you don't have to. We start every hour of the show reminding you that.
Yeah, yeah.
And this should be in your wheelhouse, because technically it's traffic. You know,
it's transportation.
It's transportation oriented.
Yep. Yeah.
So we didn't hear back from any of these smart people.
Oh, no.
And some of them have died. And yeah. I said, well, all the people on the Titanic are dead, but we have their contemporaneous reports when they got off. They said, what happened? And those reports and the authority exists of what the status of the lifeboats was. I just don't have it in front of me right now. Producer Elif did find, so we're ping-ponging back. Here's where we are now. Producer Elif, where are we on this, please?
According to the Titanic Inquiry Project, only a few of the ship's lifeboats were fully loaded, while others were but partially filled, John. Apologies for my malfunction.
Nice.
Well, all right, so that's back to the movie was right. Read that again. What was the description of the use of the lifeboats in the Titanic? How does that go?
According to the Titanic Inquiry Project, John, only a few of the ship's lifeboats were fully loaded, while others were but partially filled.
Okay. Okay. Well, I'm sorry to hear that. One last thing from yesterday's show we need to clear up. How was it that we were talking yesterday about how Schoolhouse Rock taught us about government and science and stuff like that, mathematics? How did we get onto that topic? How did Schoolhouse Rock come into yesterday?
There was a caller that called in, and it was during the Constitution quiz, and she said that she knew it because she memorized the song from Schoolhouse Rock.
Right, and that's right. We did a Constitution quiz yesterday, and we said if you can get one of these questions correct, we'll give you a Malnati's pizza.
Oh, yeah.
This is the quiz that immigrants to this country have to pass. It's their citizenship test. And the news report yesterday was that less than half of current American citizens can pass this test. You know what they should do is just go door to door.
Oh, where are you going with this one?
Yo, name both senators. And if you're not, there's a big truck and you get it and then we send you back to where you came from, which could be Ohio. But I mean, you can't be a U.S. citizen if you can't pass the Constitution test. You know, you got to be smart enough to vote. You should be smart enough to have kids. You should be smart enough to know your Constitution to be a citizen. And even though you're a citizen, if we just come up to you at a mall and go, quick, what do they call the first 10 amendments? And you don't know, then you lose your citizenship. I'm not saying we have to do that. I'm just saying that's an idea because we hold new citizens to the same standard. Why don't we make sure everybody else sort of dusts up on their U.S. constitutional knowledge? So that took us to Schoolhouse Rock, because when I asked a question, a woman, I said, what are five of the rights guaranteed in the First Amendment? Okay, we all know First Amendment's freedom of speech. But within that are five things you get to do. And she goes, oh, I know it because I learned the acronym for it, which was HARP. Was it HARP? No, it was SPAR. Was it SPAR? Speech, press, religion. There was two P's. Speech, press, petition the government,
uh-huh.
Assembly, and religion.
That's okay. It was SPPAR. Okay.
Yeah, SPAR. So you know, we're sparring for our rights here. Remember that. You probably don't have to remember that because no one's going to come up to you tomorrow and go, if you don't know what SPAR means, then you're out.
I feel like they made a movie like this and it was called The Purge. Like,
okay, so SPAR was how you would remember at least that about the First Amendment to the Constitution. Somebody said that they learned all of the elements in the periodic table of elements from a song. I'm like, that can't be. That song would be too long.
Wow.
Then producer Ella found it.
Really?
And I won't play the whole dang thing for you, but how that goes after this.
There's antimony, arsenic, aluminum, selenium, and hydrogen, and oxygen, and nitrogen, and rhenium, and nickel, neodymium, neptunium, germanium, and iron, americium, ruthenium, uranium, europium, zirconium, lutetium.
Okay, so I'm not going to play the whole thing, Jen, but there is a song, and it's...
And iodine, and thorium, and thulium, and thallium.
This is how you learn the elements. It's a real song, and some people have learned the elements courtesy of this.
Silicon, and silver, and samarium, and bismuth, bromine, lithium, beryllium, and barium.
Yeah,
that's pretty catchy.
It is, though. It works, but it's not exactly like I'm just a Bill. You're not going to remember that. I think it's remembering that song is probably just as easy and difficult as remembering the periodic table.
Lyrics to the periodic table song.
You Googling that?
Oh, yeah.
I remember gold is the one I always remembered.
Because it's the symbol, you mean?
Yeah. Well, because of the letters. A-U. Give me my gold back.
Exactly.
Not good.
And then you say, see you, copper.
Nice. See you, copper. I was doing... Go ahead, Olive.
In order to memorize that song and learn all the, and memorize all the elements, you really need to learn breathing exercises because you can't hold like that many measures.
I was doing the New York Times Sunday crossword puzzle this week. I do it all week long. I never finish it. So don't think I'm one of those smart people who can do the Sunday New York Times crossword puzzle. But super proud of myself because one of the clues this week was PB. That's all it said, PB. What does PB stand for?
Peanut butter or lead.
Yeah, well, maybe it was peanut butter was the correct answer, but lead fit. So I went ahead and put that one down. I want to do this. I want to pause, come back. We'll crosstalk with Ro and Anna a little bit and play for you a clip from the Cohen testimony today. Among the takeovers from Michael Cohen's testimony before the House committee today, which included our own Raja Krishnamoorthy, Cohen said that Mr. Trump, after becoming president, told him to lie about public hush payments to the pornographic film star Stormy Daniels. Cohen presented life in Trump world as a Faustian bargain in which he and others sacrificed their integrity for the intoxicating whiff of power. This is all from the New York Times review of what we all watched today. Mr. Cohen acknowledged that he lied under oath to Congress about a Trump Tower project in Moscow, saying he was trying to protect Mr. Trump. I am not protecting Mr. Trump anymore, he said. Republicans assailed his credibility. They noted that he's going to prison in 2 months for lying to them once before. Mr. Cohen offered a blistering assessment of the president. He's a racist. He's a con man. He's a cheat, he said. And then he provided documents, including copies of checks and financial statements, which once upon a time used to be very compelling. But these days, where you can Photoshop somebody's head onto a person who isn't that person and make it look like they're saying things they didn't say, coming up with a mimeograph, boy, there's a word for you, of a check is not all that compelling to me, even if it has the president's signature on there. I mean, you and I could generate that very check and make it look just as easy on our home computer. So maybe that's compelling to you, but it was not compelling to me. Ro and Anna will probably talk more about that.
Most important part is that Mike Monaco and his pocket square
And although the pocket square is actually being covered by the graphics on some of the networks.
Very unfortunate. It was a fine-looking pocket square.
And
it deserves his own Twitter handle, really.
It does. And his scarf. And he was wearing a scarf. And at one point, he left his scarf. Over lunch, he left a scarf in the room. And I just made sure that they had a camera on it so that nobody took it.
Can you imagine?
Very expensive silk scarf. It's pretty wild to watch your guy. You know, I've known Mike for two decades, more than that. And... three decades now. And
which one is he on the TV screen?
He's the one. He's camera right
blue
behind.
Square.
Very well dressed gentleman.
Yeah.
With the nice tan.
He's the not Lanny Davis. Lanny Davis on the left, and Mike's on the right.
Right. Yeah. Okay.
So he is, and he's been. You know, he's been my legal analyst and lawyer for years and years and years. And now all of a sudden, there he is. He's standing. He's sitting there right behind this in what may end up being one of the more consequential moments in American history in the 21st century.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, what is he doing there?
It's like hard to separate the guy.
And all I could think of is I pray to God he is not billing me for this. Because it sounds like he's not going to make his money. All right, we'll pick up on this. We're going to talk to Karen Travers, who's in Vietnam right now with the president. Tom Skilling will be here in the 4 o'clock hour. Get some analysis about last night's mayoral race as well, and have some laughs at everybody's expense. All of that is coming your way. Thank you, John.
Totals.